So, Retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day a much-loved entertainer died on live TV.
Then on Tuesday, we remember the Roots sensation of 1977.
On Wednesday, we unearth the bizarre story of the longest war you've never heard of.
On Thursday, the day an Italian became Queen of Poland.
And on Friday, we celebrate... the women who infiltrated the men-only Boston Marathon.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the Retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast with a surprise new boss.
Elon Musk. Didn't tell you guys, Elon Musk bought us, but the decimal places are different in Germany, so he got us for 44 quid. Sorry.
Welcome to, for Formula One's sake, the Honda of F1 podcasts.
Are Honda still in F1? Or are they gone now? Or are they back now?
Whenever a Honda-powered car are doing good, Honda aren't in F1. And whenever a Honda-powered car are doing bad, it's got a big H on the side.
Welcome to, for Formula One's sake, the F1 podcast that will tell me what happened this year because I was busy for a lot of it.
Do you actually know what happened in the first half of this season?
Yeah, because I was here for the first half, Phil, so I'm glad you noticed. I'm Chica Reyes, and I hope you're surrounded by your loved ones and presents and Baileys and the remains of a massive meal. Merry goddamn Christmas to the lot of you, and welcome to a celebration of the 2022 Formula One World Championship. We are going to relive the thrills, the spills, the chills, and the drills, and the bills, the windmills. Anyway, we have watched at least some of the YouTube highlights, and we're going to see what we can remember, all with our special celebrity expert guest. That is all to come.
I meant to change the script, sorry. The special celebrity expert guest cancelled.
What's Alex Jake's busy this weekend, is he?
Joining me is a man who went on a little trip to Woking. It is Phil Tromans.
Hello. Wasn't a Pizza Express before you start. I went to... part of my new job, I went to a little place, maybe you've heard it, the McLaren Technology Centre.
Woo! I know, Phil, because you sent us pictures.
Yeah, and I've heard of it, and I've fucking been there as well, so fuck you.
Well, yeah, I've been there before as well, but I've done nothing else, so I thought I'd bring this up.
I went to Alton Towers for the third time.
Tonight, Phil goes to a place he's been before.
I've actually been to the McLaren Technology Centre more often than I've been to Alton Towers, so that's a good fact. But it was the first time I'd been since Ron Dennis wasn't there, and it was quite interesting to see how the vibe had changed in the place.
It was filthy. just shit everywhere. He was right.
I mean, you jest, Terry. It wasn't quite filthy with shit everywhere, but it was considerably less spick and span than I remember it, and there were people wearing considerably more casual clothes than I remember. Which I thought was quite interesting. That was it. Oh, apparently, I nearly saw Oscar Piastri, but I was busy talking and he walked past me and I didn't notice him.
Well, I think he goes really quick on those false.
No,
legs,
I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say that. And alongside him is a man who has an electric
bar. And then a couple of gunshots and the toilets were out of action.
It is Terry Saunders.
I installed a new shower in my apartment.
That sounds advanced.
Mm. It wasn't really, because it's not an electric shower. It's just a shower, you know.
So you changed the shower head, or did you have to do
plumbing?
Well,
I was going to change the head, but then I saw a really nice shower in the shop, so I had to change the riser and drill some holes and everything. You know, it was some work.
Advanced plumbing.
Yes, and then when I finished, you know, I was cleaning the floor, so I'd put some bleach on the floor, and I was mopping the floor and everything. And then I went to reach over to the shower to rinse off the bath or something, and I got what I can only describe as an electric shock.
Right.
Now, I want to restate, this is not an electric shower.
So you messed up so much that you managed to connect electricity to something that wasn't electric.
So every time I touched any part of the shower, all the taps, I was getting a kind of a buzzing that I can only describe as uncomfortable. Not like throwing me across the room, but definitely you don't want to shower in that. So then I changed some things and I turned off some fuses and everything to check. But by this point, the floor had dried because I'd cleaned it and it wasn't doing it when the floor was dry. So in my genius, I decided the best way to see if the thing is still electric.
The floor again.
I put more water on the floor. And sure enough, it was still electric. And it turns out it's from my bath taps, which I didn't touch.
What?
well, it seems like some electric circuit somewhere is touching my pipes somewhere. But it's only a problem if the floor's wet, so I think it's fine.
Which in a bathroom will never happen.
No, but to be fair, it's only going to happen once you've got out the shower.
Yeah.
So you're fine.
The floor's wet,
but you've turned the shower off before the floor gets wet.
If I'm still on the floor and the floor's wet and I reach over to the shower, I'll get a shock. So as long as I don't do that.
Yeah, because you're never going to be wet before you get in the shower. That would be bizarre.
Well, exactly. unless you get out of the shower and realise, oh, no, I didn't wash the shampoo off my hair or something, then you're screwed.
Do you do that? I've never done that in my life. I've never got out the shower and gone, oh, whoops, forgot to wash.
I've quite often got soap in my armpits when I get out of the shower still. That's quite common. Go.
And alongside both of those is the unmistakable voice of F1, if you don't count Murray Walker or David Croft or Jonathan Leggett or Ben Edwards or James Allen or Jack Jakes, it is Jack Nichols from Off the Radio.
Jakes. Who's Jack Jakes?
That's how little you're known, Jack. A made-up name is more known as the voice of F1 than you are.
I was just trying to think if there's anyone else you... But no, I'll take the, what was it, ninth in line to the voice of F1. I'm good. I think
it's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm...
Ahead of Raymond Baxter.
Yeah, I don't... Maybe I shouldn't be ahead of Raymond Baxter, actually. But yeah, I'll take it. Looking forward to discussing every race that we had this season, because it's always 4 hours of my life I don't get back, and now we've got the more races than ever before. So it's going to be great.
We are delighted to have you back, Jack, and we made sure that Russia was cancelled just so you didn't have to suffer for any longer.
This is my second appearance of the season. I did a Chica one in August.
Oh God, you did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You sounded really good.
Did you listen to a Chica?
Absolutely not, of course.
Chica, what's going on with you?
So on Sunday, I watched the World Cup final. This brought to the end my 4 weeks of watching football, which I don't usually do. I don't actually like football, but I've been watching hours and hours and hours of games. And I've actually been quite enjoying them. But by the end of all of these games, I realised I don't actually know any of the rules at all. And I sort of realised, what is the point, you know? I mean, getting so into it, shouting at the TV and everything, but I don't know a single rule of football other than when the ball's in the goal, it's a goal.
That's the beauty
of football. Not
necessarily. It's not even it, that. That's not even a goal.
But that's the beauty of football. It's so simple. No, I love football. You can just watch it. You don't even have to pay it. But if it's a goal, you know it's a goal and that's great. If it's not a goal, you don't have to. That's why I struggle watching rugby, right? Because you can't watch rugby without knowing what they're doing. Why are they running forwards and going back? Why does he's now?
Why have they stopped and cuddled?
And now they're all, but they're all group lining hug. Up in their group hugs. But oh, we have
guys,
to
guys.
Someone puts the ball, and then we. I love football. It's simple.
We're very close to getting to the realization that Formula One's quite boring.
I think we said that in our first ever episode.
Newsflash! Since the end of the season, actually shitloads happened in the form of all the team principals paying musical chairs. So let's quickly recap. Mattia Binotto, he's gone, out dead, well not dead, but he's resigned from Ferrari despite helming their best season for ages. Who's in? Freddy Vasseur, fresh from Alfa Romeo, with a cheeky grin and a stupid fucking blazer with a horse on it. So what does that mean for Alfa / Sauber / Audi? It means Andreas Seidel, who has ditched McLaren for his upcoming German rebranding of the Italian team that's actually Swiss. And in Woking, it means a new man in charge of McLaren, Andreas Stella, who is new to the big chair but has also been at the team for 7 years and used to work alongside Michael Schumacher at Ferrari. So what do we make of all these changes, and did we see them coming?
Right, first things first, Andreas Stella sounds like a pre-qualifying Formula One team of the 90s.
Can we call him Andrea Moda for the rest of time?
And now I think about it, Andreas Seidel also sounds like a pre-qualifying team. And Freddy Vasseur sounds like a chippy con man.
One of the drivers.
He sounds like he's a spiv in Dad's army. And Mattia Binotto, I liked him.
Ferrari didn't, even though he got the best result in God knows how long for them. He's gone. He's out. Forced out, allegedly.
So, Jack, who do you know of those people? How many of those people could you text right now?
No, I haven't got their numbers.
Hang on. How far up the chain's numbers do you have?
Well,
if I said to you right now, get me someone from McLaren, how high could you go?
So, it's a very interesting question, this, because I find it very interesting. Because, so, I'm not a journalist in my... Right, I'm a broadcast journalist, a broadcaster, whatever, whatever. But I don't need to, like, it's not, I don't have many drivers' phone numbers to just, like, text them and be like, oh, hey, what? But I think journalists, like, people who work for, you know, Autosport or The Race or whatever, do. Or so, but I don't, so that's my answer. So I'd go to the press officer.
How many races have you been to this year, Jack?
All of them, surely.
All of them. No, we go to about half. We go to about half.
You don't go to the races. You don't have anyone's number. Are you?
I don't know why you invite me on the pod either. But I think that the team principal movement's very interesting. I think Fred Vasseur at Ferrari will be really, really interesting. But the problem is, you keep changing the team principal at Ferrari.
We don't.
No, Wanda, yeah, they do.
Don't blame us.
And it's the culture that needs to change, right? If Vasseur is allowed to change things from the top down, then cool, fine. But if it's not, if it's just do this role that Mattia did, nothing's going to change.
It'll be the same old crap where the toxic atmosphere of Maranello consistently strives to crush any advances that they might make. This year, the engineers made a good car, but then strategy and people not being allowed to do stuff properly meant that they couldn't use it properly.
And he's got a different job title to Binotto.
Oh, yes. They're all sort of nominally team principal, but in practice, they're different roles at different teams, aren't they?
He's like assistant to the general manager. I've never had any opinion on Frederic Vasseur until I saw that picture of him in that stupid Ferrari jacket, and now I think he's a grade A pillock.
No, what I will say about I will back Fred Vasseur here. He created a very, very successful junior team in ART. I know him a little bit from Formula E because he made the first Formula E cars. He was part of the Spark program there, and everyone who knows him really likes him, and he's a racing man and he's straightforward, and I think that would be really interesting. He's super straightforward, so how that works out with Maranello will be really, really interesting. There could be some
friction. Least straightforward team in
exactly
the universe.
So it's a really curious one, and he was in Charles Leclerc's boss when Leclerc won all of his championships in the junior formula, so I think that one's a really interesting appointment, but it might end up being nothing, but it might end up being great.
I'm fired by Barcelona?
No, but I tell you who will be. Carlos Sainz's cousin. I bet he is the first out the door. Freddie Vasectomy comes in, points at him and says, "You, I don't want to fucking see you again. Get the fuck out of here." And then he's like, "Do you know who
There'll
I am?
There'll be a special episode of Drive to Survive on that and what he does next. He'll have a spin-off show.
What about this guy who's now the McLaren guy? Do we know anything about him?
I think he's just a jobbing... I say jobbing, he's clearly done very well, but he's been around.
Yeah, he was at Ferrari for many years, and then he's been kind of pretty high up in the... I can't remember his exact... Was he like chief trackside engineer or something at McLaren? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so he was mm-hmm. pretty much up there, and then he's come into... It's a promotion. I don't know. I think that's a... I think, broadly speaking, when Stella was announced, everyone went, "Ah, seems like a good idea." Those of us that had heard of him all agreed it seemed like a decent idea. So,
Stella!
We'll see.
You reckon he's quite fighty?
Yeah.
Mm. I bet he wears a gilet.
I bet he wears a wife beater.
You can't call him that.
That was my joke.
They're very different things. Different things. What do you think?
Hey, what's the difference with a gilet and a wife beater? I thought they were the same.
Gilet's like a padded thing, zip-up thing that you wear between an outer layer and
a jacket. Yeah, and the other thing's a vest.
Or a wife beater. A vest is literally like a basketball vest.
Like a vest. Why do we need to explain to you what a vest is? It's a vest.
Well, in America, a vest is a different thing, apparently.
So it's a vest without a
apparently
zip.
Apparently, in America, I think a vest is a tank top.
Nothing's a gilet without a zip. What are you talking about? It's a gilet and a vest. There's two things, a gilet and a vest. Which one don't you know what it is?
Gilet is outdoor wear. Vest is indoor wear.
It's a vest.
A gilet without a zip.
No, it's a vest.
Anyway,
when Frederick Vesti makes it to F1, this will all be like content. Yeah.
I've got to Google. I know we're at the start of a very long podcast.
What are you going to Google? A vest?
I'm Googling wife beater.
It's a vest!
We three teams on podium are... None of us really pleased with our car. Bahrain. The 2022 season kicked off with new cars, new rules and a new team. So definitely on top of the world. We came away from the Bahrain GP wondering, could Ferrari possibly screw up this year after a 1-2 in the first race? Were you surprised by how the first race panned out?
At the time or in hindsight? Because
in hindsight, you can't be surprised about anything, surely.
Exactly.
No, I am. This is what I'm saying. In hindsight, when we went back to start doing this and I looked back at the first race, I was like, holy shit, Ferrari were all over it. I was extremely surprised. I'd forgotten.
And Red Bull's reliability was awful.
It was, wasn't it?
And I was like, wow, Ferrari going to walk this.
I think it was a very exciting start to the season. And we all, because that Mercedes, you know, it was nice. The Hamilton-Verstappen stuff at the end of last year, throughout last year, was great, but it got a bit. It was nice that wasn't the story, you know? It was nice that it was Leclerc versus Verstappen, and it was all very exciting. And they raced. They had some great racing, the two of them, for a good couple of laps, didn't they? Which was a real thrill. And then both Red Bulls retire, and oh, I was so excited in Bahrain.
Did you go?
Yep.
Oh, what was the vibe like?
You definitely
what was the vibe like in the
there.
Paddock after the whole Abu Dhabi thing?
That's a good question. The vibe wasn't... The main vibe was McLaren, what has happened, and Mercedes, what has happened. Because McLaren were terrible in Bahrain, like really, really bad. So we spent most of our time trying to find out what had happened there and at Mercedes. But Mercedes we knew from sort of Spain, didn't we, and pre-season testing. They were going to be boinging all over the place. So I think everyone was just really excited that we were in for an interesting fight. And Ferrari back at the front. Because no one wants to see, whether you're a Ferrari fan or not a Ferrari fan, you don't want to see less competitive teams at the front. No one's like, oh, I really want to see Ferrari struggling to make it into Q2. That's no fun. Oh, really? Really? No.
Only for Ferrari. I miss the late 80s, early 90s when Ferrari would be regularly right at the back.
Why?
Because it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny for a bit. And we had that in 2020, didn't we? When at Spa and Monza, they were like the slowest cars. But it's only funny for a while.
But it's more the hubris.
Like sometimes,
isn't it?
Sometimes the shtick has to change, Terry. FYI.
Wow. We're into season 7, and suddenly we're getting some complaints. No, I feel like it's because Ferrari have got the hubris. It's like Williams. I'm quite sad they're at the back, even though that is laughable for other reasons. But I think it's Ferrari have got like no offense, short man syndrome.
No offense to who? We're
we're reasonably tall.
I can't remember any of your heights. I haven't seen you for so long. So I thought if I'd have said no offence, one of you would get... I figured the shortest of you would get offended. And well done to both of you. You passed the test.
Yeah, no, we're perfectly, totally happy with our height. Our heights are absolutely fine, aren't they, Phil? Don't we have great heights?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very...
We've got the best heights,
actually.
Yeah, I think we're both great.
I'll tell you what it is, Jack. I think I've said this before. You seem short.
Anyone who's met Jack, I challenge you to not be surprised by how tall he is, because he is quite tall.
But that's because you seem short.
Appearing next to like Weber and Vernon Kay, and have you been next to Weber? No, Vernon Kay and whoever else
is
on.
Have you stood next to Vernon Kay? Are you allowed to stand near him?
Yeah, I've stood next to Vernon's taller than me.
So can we just get to the bottom of when you stood me up in Berlin, Jack? Was it because of Vernon Kay?
No, he didn't. No, he wasn't there. He wasn't there.
Fuck it. Well, that was the only acceptable answer. Sorry.
Well, so if I'd have stood you up for Vernon Kay, you'd have been fine.
I like celebrities. I can't help myself.
Why do you like... Look, this isn't therapy. We'll move on. Bahrain was great, wasn't it?
So anyway.
Start of the season was awesome.
It was good. I was excited. The season did not go the way I thought it would go, but I was excited by the... And the racing seemed quite good as well, and we'll touch on that. I don't know about you. I got used to the look of the new cars very quickly.
Well, they're good, aren't they? Because if you go back to that year, the famous year when they had the penis noses...
Yes.
And that was just...
That was not
ugly from the start. Not only ugly, but also, I mean, I'm still fascinated by how at no point did someone put the brakes on the rules going, you know, there's going to be fucking penises. But the cars look shit. And it's like the same with the short cars and the skinny cars. And like for years, the rules dictated a shit looking car. And this year, I think they said right from the start that the part of the rules was to be more aesthetically pleasing. And they were, you know, it's not that hard to draw a car that looks like a kind of kid's toy. That's what you want a Formula One car to look like. And for years they haven't. And this year they have. So well done.
No, they did look really cool this year. And also, do you remember everyone was worried about how they'd all look the same? And all these rules, all the cars are going to look the same. Mm. They really didn't. Like the Red Bull and the Ferrari and the Mercedes looked really different.
It was side pods in Bahrain, yeah. wasn't it? And in testing as well.
Although,
it
do you know what?
Whoa, these side pods be cray cray.
What disappointed me most? Do you remember that F1 show car they wheeled out whenever they talked about the new rules?
Holographic one. Yeah.
Yeah, I was under the impression that most of the teams would have holographic liveries, and I'm pissed off.
There should be a rule: one race of the year they have to have shinies.
Saudi Arabia. The final weekend of March brought us the Festival of Motorsport, Abuse of Human Rights and Violence that was the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Everyone broke down, Tsunoda broke down on the way to the grid, Verstappen won after a bit of late race argy-bargy, and there were rockets. Was this year set to be a tight race to the end?
Another race where Verstappen and Leclerc are fighting. You're like, what is this? This is just phenomenal. After the best F1 season ever last year, it's all starting again. It was great.
We are going to have this all season long.
Yes.
It's going to come down to the wire.
Also, I can't think of another year, and I haven't started to think about this until I started this sentence.
So the actual answer is you can't think of another year. That's the end of the sentence.
I don't remember what years are. But when was the last time that there were two drivers fighting for one championship the year before? And the second year, there was two different drivers, but one of them was the same.
Probably Hill and Schumacher what? 95 into Hill and Villeneuve 96 into Villeneuve and Schumacher 97 into Schumacher and Häkkinen 98. You probably had 4 years in a row where that happened.
Yeah. So every year is what we're saying.
Sorry, I think that's something on my internet. I didn't hear Jack's answer.
Yeah. Weirdly, it was somehow cut out by producer Matt. It's really weird.
Anyway,
great point there, Terry. Brilliant job.
Never.
It was good. Well, apart from the missiles.
There were missiles, but turns out. This year, there's been a lot of missiles. At this point of the year, it really looked like it was going to be a Leclerc-Verstappen to the end. You'd think that Hamilton and Mercedes would get their act together quite quickly, so it felt like by the summer, they'd probably have the championship, but they'd be winning races by the summer, blah, blah, blah. There was no way you could predict at this point of the season that Verstappen would fucking walk it like a boring Schumacher year.
No. No chance.
No. Well, it wasn't so much like a boring Schumacher year, because
yes,
Schumacher years, they completely dominated through being miles better than everyone else, and in fairness, he did that. But it was also this year because everybody else fucked up. Like, Mercedes made a shit car, Ferrari were Ferrari, and it was just Red Bull fucked up the least, which I guess is the same.
Verstappen was on pole. Verstappen was on pole for less than a third of the races, and he only didn't win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. He won 2/3 and only had pole on 1/3. Remarkable.
It did very well, but it was in a considerable chunk of Ferrari continually fucking up one way or the other. But still, Saudi Arabia, I mean, as we're speaking just after the World Cup, the whole human rights sport washing in the Middle East thing is pretty fresh in the memory. I feel like we've kind of got used to it in F1. We probably shouldn't get used to it, but we have.
Of course we got used to it. Do you remember there was talks of boycotting the Bahrain Grand Prix 10 years ago, and now it's just like, oh, yeah. They do that there. Oh, it's bless them.
Yeah, they have their now ways. They're literally racing through missiles, and they're like, "No, it's fine. We'll have a bit of a meeting, and maybe we'll say something about it." But that was literally all that happened.
We've written a sternly worded letter to the missiles to say, "Please stop missiling," and during the race weekend, rest of the year, totally fine.
But at this point, Leclerc was in the lead, wasn't he? So he'd had a win and a second.
Yep.
So he was well ahead.
He
was partially ahead.
I'm going to put money on Leclerc winning the championship at this point.
It is looking pretty strong at this point.
It's a good job my bank put a stop to my gambling.
So at this point, I've got a listener question for you. Tim Renler asks, is Die Hard a Christmas film? Also, which F1 baddie would be the best Hans Gruber? I'm going to say Christian Horner. He's got an opinion here, despite asking. I'm going to say Christian Horner, as he outwardly says and does one thing to create a lot of noise and distraction, but is really just doing something entirely different.
Okay, so Die Hard is a Christmas film, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
And Sebastian Vettel.
Oh.
Because he's also clearly British pretending to be English, pretending to be German.
That's very good, Terry. Well done.
So does that mean he's putting on a slightly racist German accent?
Look, Sebastian Vettel is as German as the people in a lower low.
Isn't that set in France? What am I missing?
Oh, there's Germans.
Oh, right.
There's Nazis in it. There's fucking. It's
I haven't watched
war.
It. Well, who watches a lower low?
Oh,
old people like us.
I forgot you're tall, but you're young.
I've heard of it.
I've heard of it, but I don't know. But it sounds French to me.
Heil Hitler, club. I shouldn't say that here.
No, you made me say it.
I just said Heil Hitler on German internet. I can't.
What, it's French, but in the war or something?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I don't...
So the war, do you remember the war?
No, obviously I don't remember the war.
You've heard of it.
I'm conceptually aware of it. Did you two do O-levels?
No, fuck you, you...
Did you use quills?
It's first of the evening. I never thought it'd be aimed at Jack.
I did GCSEs and then dropped out.
Yeah, we did A-levels when they still had letters for the results instead of numbers that they apparently have now.
I didn't do A-levels.
Do you have much of a foreign listening? Because this is going right over their heads.
A lot of Americans, mostly in San Diego.
Really?
Best F1 baddie, quickly. I would say Helmut Marko is the obvious choice. Maybe more of a Bond villain than a diehard villain. But
Alonso's a bit of a bad guy, isn't he?
Oh, that's true. That's a good shout.
No,
actually.
Alonso's like the henchman who gets killed on the first scene. Oh, I wouldn't have got killed if it was anyone else's fault. Oh, God, I'm really good. I'm the best shot, except for this one time when you're filming me. Oh, God.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got this GP2 bladed hat.
That's way too niche of reference.
Yeah, nobody
yeah, I think Alonso is a little, you know, masterminding genius works.
I mean, masterminding genius goes so far, but, you know.
Masterminding genius who's found himself in average teams for the past 20 years.
Aha, I've shown you, Ferrari. Look at you, Red Bull and Mercedes, you won't touch me. I'm going to Aston Martin.
but that's the point.
Now you'll be sorry.
The masterminding geniuses always get foiled. So it works perfectly.
By themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So who's foiling him?
Like the hood in Thunderbirds, right? He's always going to win, and he's got that, and then he loses.
That's old school.
You haven't heard of Thunderbirds?
Yeah, do you know Thunderbirds?
But you're referencing Thunderbirds, which is at least 15 years old.
Yeah, but they replayed Thunderbirds in the 90s, so.
Wait, Dad's Army?
No.
Some mothers do.
I always liked Frank Spencer, actually. I could relate.
Well, do you know that predates Hello, Hello?
I've seen Metropolis what's he called? Thingy Fritz Lang. But that was before my
Franz Tost.
You know the famous line in Hello, Hello?
What, Hello, Hello?
It is I, Leclerc. Coming second in the championship.
That's why people keep saying that.
I was just
that.
Pissing by.
Okay, Jack. Your dare, if you choose to accept it, is to get a low references into the Formula E next year, and then I'll watch it.
Okay, fine. It's a deal. Fine, it's a deal.
Brilliant.
Good morning. Welcome to the Oil Dubai EPRI.
the French EPRI. The whole French EPRI is just continual low references.
Yeah, Jack, have you seen Formula E's new design? What do you think about it? I don't mean the cars. I mean the fucking terrible logo and font.
Australia!
And we're back in Oz. They'd had a couple of years off, thanks to COVID, mate. But now a reprofiled Albert Park track brought back exactly the same weirdly disappointing race. Verstappen broke down, literally, and Leclerc stormed off into the distance as the Mercedes bounced up and down and up and down. So, this is when I already thought Leclerc was going to be champion. But what were your thoughts? We kind of already asked him, sorry.
So at this point, Leclerc is 46 points ahead of Verstappen after three races.
There we go.
46 points.
And in this race,
he got
the pole, the win, and the fastest lap. So it was looking pretty good for Charlie Clark.
And Verstappen was broken down.
Yeah, no reliability.
Two out of three races, useless. They've broken down.
But we should then talk about the Mercedes breaking up and down and up and down and up and down. Because, so the porpoising was a big thing this year.
I'd forgotten about that.
But when did that stop?
Has it stopped?
No, it got better, but it never really stopped. They were having it bad in Abu Dhabi, I think, didn't they? They were still having it bad.
Did they?
Oh, really?
But there was a rule, because there was a rule change where they had... They brought something in mid-season, didn't they, where there was a certain limit of... Jack, explain what I'm talking about, because...
Well, they had
stupid.
The vertical G-sensor, didn't
That's
they?
That's what I meant, yeah.
You literally can't bounce anymore because you're breaking your drivers.
We were in for a boring season at the end of the Australian Grand Prix. It was going to be a boring year. Ferrari domination. What's the point in turning up?
I thought they were going to run. Well, there was an early sign that maybe it wouldn't be quite so smooth for Ferrari because Sainz had a nightmare.
Oh, God.
What happened there?
Straight backwards and then crashed on the second lap.
Yeah.
Wasn't Sainz either shit or unlucky at the start of the year? Like every race.
Yes.
He was like both. He was like a cool thud, wasn't he? He was just like out on the first corner at every race.
Yes, and didn't that happen to him in his very last race as well, Coulthard? I seem to remember.
I do remember that, because he had a special livery and it only lasted...
Yeah. And an onboard helmet camera as well.
It was the first ever helmet cam, wasn't
it? Yeah, well, not the first ever. Yeah. I think the first one was in the early 90s with Mark Blundell at Spa. But
and Senna at Imola. Oof.
No.
Yeah, but you're right, Terry. Sainz was on the podium in the first two races of the season, so really tough start.
But then wasn't.
Oh, when I say the start of the season, I mean...
Rounds three and four.
From three, from yeah, exactly.
We all know the first two don't count. The first two are like trial runs.
They're like practice pancakes.
Yeah.
Then we went to Italy and we were treated to a mildly interesting sprint race preceded by a relatively boring main race. Some highlights, however, included Sainz securing his place as Ferrari's number two, despite keen competition from Charles Leclerc, as both decided to hurl themselves off track. Red Bull returned to dominance, Mercedes were nowhere, and McLaren were somewhere. What do you remember?
At this point, Leclerc is only winning one more race for the rest of the year. This is round four of the championship.
Oh my God,
he's
really?
Leading Verstappen by 46 points. He's got one more win on the way. The whole rest of the season.
I've written down that gap wrong then, because I've got that he led Russell by 36.
No, he led Verstappen by 46. Because Verstappen was sixth in the championship.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So he's got one more win in his locker, and this is round four.
That, I didn't think of that. That is remarkable. It's remarkable that he had such a big lead after four rounds. But then the fact that would be it, largely. That is, what a season Ferrari had.
Hmm.
My word. Could it be more Ferrari? How much more Ferrari could it be?
That's such a depressing stat, isn't it?
After Australia, he won one more race.
That is so sad.
Poor Charlie Clark. Do you think he'll win a title?
Nah.
How do you reckon he's coped this year? I mean, because there's not many people, and Jack, you can now do your knowledge of Formula One thing that gets me here. How many drivers have had arguably the best car and failed in such a spectacular way?
Sergio Perez.
But not really, you know. Like, who?
He got beaten by.
There are arguments that, you know, the best cars haven't always won the championship. You think back to 2008. Yeah. I think the Ferrari was probably better than the McLaren, but Hamilton was better than Massa. But it's all a bit close. The one interesting one was 2002. 2002, I think. Hang on, I'm just going to check this. But I think Juan Pablo Montoya maybe had about seven poles in a row and never won any races. Yeah. Montoya in 2002 had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pole positions and didn't win a race. It was and finished therefore third in the championship. So that was one. It was that kind of thing where Leclerc just kept banging it on pole, but couldn't win.
Quick over a lap, but not in the race. You have to have strategy.
So therefore, the question is, how do you reckon he's coped? How well has he coped?
He's probably gone back to his millions of pounds in Monaco and his model girlfriend.
That's
money
not
doesn't
enough,
make Phil. You happy, Phil.
We all know that that's never enough.
We know from personal experience that it's never enough. I think he's probably... I wonder if there's a dawning realisation that even if he cuts out his own personal mistakes, of which he has made some this year, he's still stuck at
you
Ferrari.
You have to say...
And I don't see any signs of the... Of
that answer to whoever asked it, will Leclerc win a title? Maybe the answer is yes, whenever he leaves Ferrari.
This is it, but would he? Where would he go?
Well, Mercedes will need someone soon, won't they?
This is another casualty of Ferrari's blame culture, isn't it? Because when Vettel got to Ferrari, the people that had hired him had all been fired. So he was just like, hey, where's the guy? Where's... Giorgio, I'm guessing an Italian. He's like, oh no, he's gone. Sorry, he's dead. Yeah, and kind of the same happened with Alonso, wasn't it? Like he just Ferrari will just routinely just sack everybody, and then they've got to start again. So you sign this driver for a multi-year contract, and then on year two of the contract, you go, right, we're going to start again. It's a bit embarrassing, but this time we're going to get it right.
But this time, there, as we mentioned earlier with Freddie V, they are at least bringing in someone who Leclerc is up for, you know, and worked with and blah, so at least that's a sort of a step in the
spirit crushed
no doubt, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, but
or in a direction.
There's going to be upheaval, you know. Freddie Vasseur is going to come in and he's going to throw his vasectomy fist down, and you know the Italians are all going to be like, oh, we're not going to work for you, you're not Italian, fuck you, you don't do it the Italian way, you're sober, and you know, they're all going to resent him, and it's going to take a year or two. And by then, Leclerc's going to be old. He's going to be like 23 or something. And I don't know. I just...
What if Andrea Stella does an amazing job at McLaren and then Ferrari, like, an Italian who knows how to lead a team?
Well, don't forget, there's another team here that we mentioned. We didn't really give much talk to at the start in the news, but Audi on a big hiring spree, and they're going to want a star driver in a couple of years, aren't they? So
Lando Norris. Got to be.
Well, obviously it's going to be Lando Norris. I'm trying to make some debate. What if it's Charles Leclerc?
Well, no, but that's a genuinely legitimate point.
Well, he's been at the team before.
Oh yeah,
Kimi Raikkonen.
Do you reckon right now Bottas is going, I'm in for this Audi driver, and everyone's like, oh mate, no.
Bottas 7.0. He's getting it ready.
I mean, he might be the second driver.
No.
Reserve?
No. Test. No. Simulator.
So we've got a listener question now. Charles Brooker asks, Jack.
Charlie Brooker?
Oh.
Is this podcast the low point of your career?
Well,
you've done it before, so this would be the... However,
I don't think Charles. I think, like most people, Charles Brooker hasn't heard of a Formula E.
It's actually.
I think somebody did mention Marbula E, but
oh, that was no Marbula E. I thought, why am I doing this? But it was something to do in lockdown. And people who don't watch motorsport were just like, was that you on the marbles?
Is it still going?
No, on the marbles. That's another podcast. What's going on?
What was the question? Is this a low point in my career? That's a very kind thing to say, to suggest that my career has had highs. So that's I'm taking it in that way.
Come on, you've been the face of marbles.
No, it's not the low point of my career. I've had worse days than this. And way less
fun.
What's
been the worst?
What's been the low point of your career?
Winter Olympics 2014. They hired me to do... I said, after I did some Olympics in 2012, I was like, oh, I'd love to come and do ski cross and snowboard cross and those, you know, downhill racing elements of winter sports, because I enjoy skiing and I like racing, and that seemed like it would fit. Then I sort of, about a month out, they were like, oh, by the way, you're doing all freestyle skiing and snowboarding. So it's what, like half pipe? So suddenly I'm doing the half pipe snowboarding, which I've not got a clue about, and I've tried my best to learn, but
look how fast he's going down
no
the pipe.
I kept so in snowboarding it's like cool to fall over, which I didn't know, so I'm going, oh, he's fallen over again, and you know what, hang on, I will read you,
I'm not sure it is cool to fall over.
I'm going to read you a email I got from a man.
Oh,
so February 11th 2014.
Whoa, before you read this,
how
you found that suspiciously
good.
Yeah.
No, because the tattoo. There's a word in it that has never been sent an email to me before. So I can just Google this. I can just search this one word in Gmail and it comes up. So here we go. This is
okay. Before you read it, so we have to guess the
this,
word.
Yeah, but. This is from a guy called Brendan. And if you were a hardcore snowboard fan in America, you got me. So it was not great. Here we go. If anyone ever asks you to announce a snowboard event again, please decline. You should be embarrassed. You announce like a jackass. You don't know what the tricks are, you don't know anything about the riders, and all you talk about is how poorly they rode, touching the pipe, etc. You certainly get more excited about the riders doing poorly than when they send it. I am listening to you as we speak, and I don't even have words for how much you suck. And he goes down. Try not to get so excited, you dipshit. You sound like you're announcing a NASCAR race. You owe a big apology to riders across the US and anywhere else that was stuck listening to your asinine dipshit comments. So that was Brendan.
So was the word NASCAR.
It was asinine. No one is... I don't have asinine anywhere.
Oh,
yeah,
word,
agreed. So that was the... Picking that up, when you think you're, wow, you know, doing your best at the Winter Olympics and someone's taken the time to find your... I was already getting enough abuse on Twitter that I turned off my Twitter, and then someone has gone to the effort of finding my personal email address and sending me that. Wasn't much fun.
Wow.
Was it somebody that competed and lost?
I don't know who that... Yes. I didn't reply.
It was Sean White.
Yeah. Sean White was competing. I remember him. He did a big old spinny thing.
He's gone upside down. He won't have meant to do that.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel for you, Jack, but also I find this weird because, like, when you watch obscure Winter Olympic sports,
like snowboarding, a multi-billion
fuck off, Phil. No one watches it. But that thing is, the commentator, you just trust that the commentator knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is
that they've applied and been like, can I do this?
Because but
I
if you don't, but the thing is, if you don't know about the sport, you have this trust that the commentator knows what they're talking about. So it's totally fine. So if I'd have watched it, I would have been like, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Completely agreed. You know, most people who would have watched it would have thought, oh, this guy, wow, he's a real snowboarding. But I got abuse for marbles as well. I got tweets going and going, you don't... I'm not joking.
From the hardcore marble
heads. I'm not joking.
Heads.
The first Marbleree, if you watch it in the YouTube comments, it says, you know, this guy doesn't know anything about marbles. He keeps talking about, like, they're inanimate objects and stuff. I'm thinking they are. What
are you supposed to say?
I'm serious. That's 100% true.
Talk about their feelings. I've been
married very happily for 4 years.
Miami. Miami was very keen to please, and with several A-list celebs for Martin Brundle to harass on the grid, and even more Z-listers that nobody recognised. And a side point, the racing. Let's just say that Verstappen won and Lando crashed, and to be honest, that was about it. Question: did you think this was going to be as boring as it was? And also, Jack, were you there?
I was there.
What was it like?
Oh, it was.
It looked like a good
event. It was special. Yeah, it was a really, really crazy event. You're in Miami, and I loved it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. The race.
Good facilities.
The facilities were okay. The facilities were, actually, you know what? The media center was quite good. The commentary box was okay, quite small, but okay. But the whole event was. There was such a buzz. There was such a buzz about the place. The comparison I say is that it felt like a American sporting event that happened to be a Formula One race, whereas Austin is a Formula One race that happens to be in America. You know what I mean? That's the kind of difference.
So they just bought the off-the-shelf razzmatazz of American sport.
Yeah, and it was...
And plonked it there.
And it was fantastic.
But I would say as a fan, or like as someone who watches on the telly, like you do most of the year... I think the Miami Grand Prix was entirely forgettable. I don't even mean for the actual race itself. All those bits you're talking about doesn't come across.
Well, no, I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I think that's a really interesting thing about... I'm not interested in celebrities and who's on the grid. And I don't really...
Vernon Kay.
Vernon Kay is doing panto in High Wycombe. I don't think we're talking the same as David Beckham and like...
Brian Cant.
Who's the most famous person you've ever seen in a panto?
Michelle Obama and people like that, what? You know, like, and all those other people that were at the Miami Grand Prix.
He's behind you. Quick, get the security in.
See, I don't know if it's just people say it and then it becomes a myth. You know what I mean? In the same way, it's the same with Monaco, right? Everyone says Monaco's amazing. Wow, what a wonder! But when you're watching on telly, it's boring, isn't it?
Dull as fuck. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's somebody we've never heard of on the grid, ignoring Martin Brundle.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Miami, from our point of view, I would happily never watch it again. But the fact that so many people that were there and presumably had money and were more important really liked it suggests it's not going anywhere.
All I remember from that was the thing about the boat not being in the water. That's all I remember.
Yeah, the fake water. At least Abu Dhabi's got real water.
Why get so angry about Miami? It's still a motor race, right? You're still tuning in for a Formula One race and they go around a Formula One track. Not a great track. But why get so angry that celebrities have come to races? I don't get it.
Because they're doing all this and they're ignoring the people who are actually interested in this. Well, I'm sure there are celebrities.
But the people, if you love F1, then you don't go to Miami. You're going to Austin.
Well, that's true.
So that's
fine. But
then
don't have it there.
What? Because we can only have something. We can only have.
They're going to all the bother of setting up a crap track around a car park in Miami when they could be at like Cadwell Park.
Yeah, of course. But we go to Bahrain and set all the bother up of doing a thing in Bahrain, and not many fans come.
That's a
although
much better track,
it was much busier this year. Yeah, okay, I agree. The Miami circuit wasn't great, but why? There's a room. We've got 24 races on the calendar. There's room for everything. I don't understand why.
I think you've got to.
No,
you got to remember
too many races. Get rid of.
Oh, too many races. I agree, but that's just how many there are.
No, but the audience of Formula One is mainly, no offence, Phil, dads who haven't got much sleep and they want to watch the race in a bit of peace. You know, they manage to get the family off to Westfield or whatever. Yes, there's having a cheeky wank because there's a supermodel on the grid, but mostly it's just like watching people in the telly go, we're having a great time, look at all these famous people. And it's like, it's hard enough watching millionaires go around a track for 2 hours, but then to watch... Everyone going, oh, this is great. We're in Miami. Yeah. Woo. It's just a bit depressing.
So this is why we like the British Grand Prix, because everyone's like, we're here in a field in Silverstone. It's raining. You don't feel like you're missing out, because you too could be in a field in Northamptonshire. You've chosen
not to be. No. It's better than that. It's when there are those same famous people in the rain in Northampton.
Oh, so you like
fuck
you. So you like celebrities getting rained on?
It's my thing, Jack.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
It's a theme night for clubs in Berlin.
OnlyFans. You know that thing with, is it Cameo, where you get people to do a famous message?
Yes, I've got one for my dad for his birthday.
Who from?
Was he happy with it?
Oh, it's his birthday on Boxing Day, so he hasn't seen it yet.
So who is it?
It's Carl Kennedy from Neighbours.
No.
Does your dad love Neighbours?
He has watched Neighbours religiously since the 80s.
No way.
Is Stefan Dennis on there?
No, he's back now, yeah. He's not on Cameo, though, because I look for him.
Is Carl Kennedy still with them?
Make him feel good.
I can make you feel good.
Susan.
No, but Carl Kennedy left Susan for Natalie Bassingthwaite. I can't remember the character's name.
I think she's on it as well.
She's back on it.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
But it was too expensive.
Oh, well, she's on Cameo.
One, so I don't love my dad that much. I think so.
Are any of a lower low on Cameo?
Are there any of them still alive?
Cameo AO. I regret it, sorry.
I mean, Jesus.
Personalised video, £410.
Oh, yeah, that's why I didn't go for her.
Bassingthwaite is expensive.
There's some Formula One peeps on there as well.
Am I on here?
Yeah, you can get.
I don't think I am. I'm just checking.
You could be. I guarantee there's people less famous than you on there.
No, I'm not. That's good.
You didn't know if you were on there.
Well, I presumed I wasn't. Yeah, hang on, I've got to check if Alex Jakes is on here.
If you're doing this podcast for nothing, then you really should think about your own position.
No, Jakes is not on here either.
I mean, I've just Googled for F1, and I'll tell you who's on there. For the princely sum of £82, you can have a message from Roman Grosjean. £49, Karun Chandhok.
I want Roman Grosjean.
Oh, Eduardo Mortara.
Oh.
Chris Medland's on there. £33
for Chris Medland.
Jack, can you do a cameo for us?
Yeah, fine.
Can you do one now?
For me.
It's for Terry. For Terry, for his birthday. Okay.
It's my birthday next month.
Hi, but Terry. It's Jack Nichols here. You might remember me from Sochi 2014. I'd like to wish you a happy birthday from all your friends at FF1S, including Phil, Chica, and Matt. Have a great day.
Yeah.
I've gone green.
That actually
could have made 33
me
quid there.
That made me genuinely happy. It made me feel like I had friends. Chica.
Well, that was my. Chica. That was. I was doing a bit about how they're reading it and they don't actually know how to say things.
Spain. For the sixth race of the season, we went to Barcelona. What happened? Well, away from the Ferrari disaster, Lewis Hamilton was beaten by his teammate. Again, Mercedes also hadn't fixed their porpoising. In fact, it looked like it was disintegrating Hamilton's spine, and Yuki Tsunoda had his car fixed with gaffer tape. Oh yes, and Lance Stroll and Nicholas Latifi had absolute nightmares. Matt Phil Carver asks, what is it like when you randomly run into a driver whose races you've been commentating on? Is it awkward? Are you suddenly just wondering if you've slagged them off on comms? Or do media folks just act like a bunch of rabid fangirls around the drivers? Do tell, Jack.
I have more knowledge about it in the Formula E's. And yeah, there are drivers that I thought didn't like me because I give them quite a bit of stick on the TV.
But it turns out they just hadn't heard of you because they don't watch Formula E.
Exactly. So that is true. But so some, you get a real difference of drivers that watch back and drivers that, there are some drivers you're like, you've never heard about me at all or heard what I say about you. Some drivers, there was one race in Montreal and Nick Heidfeld had crashed with a chap called Loic Duval, a Frenchman. Came out of the commentary box. Degrassi. Degrassi's had a go at me and Dario before about stuff we've said on commentary. So yeah, you do get it, but you have to kind of try and create a decent relationship with these drivers whilst also being honest. And most of them accept that you've got to be honest and you've got a job to do, you know? And if you say someone hasn't had a good race, then they can come up to you and give their excuses or whatever, but they still know that they sort of haven't. So it's a very, very interesting dynamic for sure. I mean, look at Max at the end of this year refusing to talk to Sky F1 because of stuff that they'd been saying about Abu Dhabi or
Verstappen,
whatever.
Verstappen versus Kravitz.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, those things happen. I think Michael Schumacher didn't talk to Martin Brundle for a long time after Jerez 97. I think Brundle, you know, said Schumacher did it on purpose or whatever, and they stopped speaking for a long time, I think. So
couldn't handle the truth.
It happens.
Are they speaking now?
No.
It's an innocent question.
It's not at all. It's the exact opposite of innocent.
Monaco! So Monaco was very nearly interesting thanks to some rain and tyre mayhem, but then the rain stopped and it was boring. When will the bigwigs fucking learn?
Never. It's the old Miami. Everyone has a lovely time there, so they think it's a good race.
Hang on though, wasn't it this year that Monaco was out of contract? Or was that last year?
I think it was this year, but they renewed the contract, so it's hanging around for a bit.
Because there was a fleeting moment where it really felt like they were going to fuck Monaco over.
Yes, because they wanted to get loads of new races in, and they were like, there's only so many we can get, we're going to have to jettison some.
Then. And Monaco were being pricks about it, going, we've got to have our camera guy doing it.
It's just one bloke.
He's the brother-in-law of my husband. Hang on, it doesn't matter. Anyway, he's got his own camera, so he has to do it. And I think Monaco won, and I'm pretty pissed off.
I love Monaco. Yeah. You won't hear a bad word said about it from me.
Do you like the racing, though? Do you ever watch the race?
I think it is special enough that they've been having motor races there since, 1929, 1939? It's been on the calendar It's been on the calendar since the very start. Qualifying in Monaco, I just find spellbinding.
People have been murdered in Whitechapel since the Victorian age. Does that mean we should still have it going? That doesn't.
I mean, it is still going.
That's right. It's a prestige race.
Qualifying is great. Watching the cars thrash around,
it's unbelievable.
The racing is
agreed,
terrible.
But I think qualifying and the history makes up for the fact the race isn't always. The race is usually not going to be great. It was pretty decent this year. Come on,
were you there?
Yes, I was there.
Oh, is that where you like it? You get your own little.
The BBC yacht.
Yeah, the BBC yacht. We fly in on the BBC helicopter.
It's called W1A.
We borrow it from Gary Lineker for the weekend and fly in on the BBC helicopter. To be clear, this is all not true before this ends up in the mail.
Okay, the Biebercopter.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a question. Here's a genuine question. When you're with Jodie and Palmer, at what point does the sheer disparity of money that you both have get awkward?
When he comes by yacht, I guess.
No, never. He's on the EasyJet flight out of Gatwick with us. Gets in the hire car. I usually drive the hire car. We go for dinner.
Oh.
Well, I'm not going to let him drive the hire car, am I? Come on.
Who pays for dinner? Do you go Dutch? I
don't know what going Dutch is. We split the dinner.
You let off some orange flares.
Yeah.
Yeah, going Dutch is letting off some flares and running out of the restaurant saying, I'm not going to talk to Ted Kravitz.
No, we split dinners. It's like...
Do you think he pities you?
I don't think so.
I'm just saying, because when I was growing up, I was very poor and I had some well-off friends.
Did you feel pitied?
Their parents definitely pitied me. Yeah. Once I went on holiday,
you weren't pitied for your financial position. You were pitied because of your personality. There's a very clear difference.
Ooh, it's coming back. It's coming back.
Jack, I think it's fair to say I was pitied for bucks.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't blame it all on money. Terry, imagine a nice, down-to-earth, regular guy who likes F1.
Nope.
That's Jolyon Palmer.
Hey, you and Jolyon sound like you get on.
Yeah, if you hadn't blanked him in the lift at BBC headquarters, maybe you would.
He blanked me in the lift.
Well, why was it? He doesn't know you.
I literally introduced you and Terry just went,
Look, I got really scared, all right? Fuck you.
Azerbaijan. You never quite know what kind of race Baku will deliver. And this year, it would have been entirely dull had Ferrari not decided to out-Ferrari themselves by turning a pole position into a double DNF with some fried engines, basically knackering their championship chances. Can you remember what else happened on that race weekend?
I don't remember much other than this being the race where Ferrari really cemented their status as Ferrari. I don't have anything
Leclerc
else to say about Azerbaijan.
Verstappen
I can't remember about it.
Paris
second.
That
was about it, wasn't it? Leclerc had a shit pit stop. Sainz retired again.
I mean, this can't was... We need to. I guess what we haven't talked. We've talked about the engines blown up and everything, but we really haven't talked yet about Ferrari's calamitous strategy calls this year. Like, they've just. Like, it's been a joke, isn't it? Like, what? I don't understand how you can be so bad at it.
I think it's down again to the structure within Ferrari. Like, you're not allowed to question things. I think they have a plan at the start of the weekend. And they must stick to that plan at all costs, because if you're an underling, you can't You haven't got the authority to overrule people and actually make some decisions. You've just got to carry out what's been told. But the trouble is, things don't stay the same in Formula One, and when things change, they just don't seem to be able to react. Hence the number of times we've seen them go out on the wrong tyres, or kind of tyres.
It is only Ferrari that get to like plan F, isn't it? We're on plan F, point two.
Yeah.
They seem to like, they've got a list of pre-prepared plans, not realising that sometimes you just have to freestyle. And I don't think they have the facilities, like the company structure, to be able to freestyle in the way that they need to. It seems to me, anyway.
It is quite damning, isn't it? Just to think of a team that storied and successful are also such a fucking mess. Like, it is fascinating, isn't it? Really.
And the thing is, the interesting thing with Ferrari is, when were they great?
When somebody non-Italian
was
running.
No, I didn't quite mean that, but I meant you had that Schumacher period from, let's say, 97 to 2006. They were championship contenders. No, actually a bit later, because they obviously, wow, they eight, we'll give them eight as well, where they were front, real proper front runners. Before that, yeah. Before that, late 70s, with Scheckter was the last world title in 1979. Then you had a bit of Lauda. Nothing much in the 60s, honestly, and then a bit in the 50s with Ascari and the like. But
yeah, I think we've discussed this before, that they had two big chunks, which is why they're so ahead in, you know, a lot of the stats. They did have two periods where they were just really, really successful, not dissimilar to the Red Bull chunk and the Mercedes chunk. And they've sort of traded on that ever since.
Well, it's a bit like Williams, isn't it? Because like Williams are still up there in terms of the greatest teams of all time. But if you're in your 20s and you watch Formula One, you've only known them as a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
And yet they're still like, was it third or fourth in the standings or something?
What, Williams?
No, like of all time.
Yeah, of all time, right.
Champion.
Yeah, they're well up there, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in part by dint of being around for a good few decades. But yeah, they had, I mean, most of the 80s of the 90s.
Yes, they've been around for a good few, but they only won in the 80s and 90s, and we're in the 2020s now. So, you know, they haven't.
Hey, are we forgetting about Maldonado, 2010?
I'm talking championship.
12.
He missed out. He was unlucky, Maldonado, there. That garage hadn't burned down and destroyed all their hopes.
I still reckon that was an insurance job.
Didn't work, did it?
Paid Maldonado off.
Canada! For fun times at rain. Canadian qualifying did just that, and somehow Fernando Alonso ended up on the front row of the grid, and Charles Leclerc started on the back because of his perennially exploding engine. It looked like being a very interesting race, and it wasn't exactly dull, but neither was it a classic. Alonso dropped back and probably finished seventh like he did all year, but it was everyone else's fault. Verstappen walked it. How did Hamilton get a podium?
I don't think it's fair to say Verstappen walked it. Sainz was right with him. Carlos Sainz was right with him. I really enjoyed the end of that Grand Prix. I really thought Sainz was going to do him at one point, but just had a bit of oversteer on the exit of the hill. I don't know. But this was the start. Was this the start of the mega Hamilton run? Yes, it was, wasn't it? This was the start of his five podiums in a row, where he just, after spending the first third of the season messing around with development, he was like, nah, I'm just going to race the car. And then he was kind of back to Hamilton style, really.
Was this the one where Sainz was all over the back, and it was just, he just didn't quite have...
Yeah, so close.
It was just like, he just didn't quite have the move, did he? It was a real kind of, oh, mate. And obviously, he's going up against Verstappen, who's one of the best drivers of all time, blah, 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 blah. But still, made him look a bit shit.
Yeah, looking for his first Grand Prix win. I don't think he looked shit, but it was just really tough to, because also the Red Bull was quick in a straight line, which we saw all year, blah, 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 blah.
But it was that classic thing where when you're second that closely, you do look like first loser, which is such a horrible phrase.
Yeah.
But I do feel like...
I enjoyed it. It was all right.
Yeah. It was all right. It's fine.
It's fine. Great Britain. July came and so did Silverstone. After a rainy...
So did I, according to the diary.
After rainy and entertaining qualifying, it set the scene for a decent race. On race day, there was an hour of worrying that maybe things had gone horribly wrong, thanks to a lack of coverage of what looked like a pretty heavy accident. Soon it became clear that Zhou Guanyu was actually fine, which meant the thumbs up for replays of carnage from all angles. And then there was an excellent scrap from between five different drivers on track. What a classic.
That was a good one.
I mean, yeah.
Silverstone, it's a good track.
That was a big crash, though, wasn't it?
Oh, it was.
That was the biggest crash of the year, I'd say. Can't think of a bigger one.
It was just kind
of... Failure of the roll hoop. Oh.
Not since Pedro Diniz in 1999 have we seen that.
Oh, was that Nürburgring, was
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Good roll hoop failure, that one.
You with your asinine comments on roll hoops.
Yeah. He didn't want to do that. Actually, I think you'll find that was a move, and you got extra points for it.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a scary one. I like the ones where you see them in the background and you don't see anything else of it for 20 minutes, and you're like, that could be dodgy. But then, as you say, once it's clear that they are absolutely fine, it's like, right, let's get the 4K working hard. And at the same time, Albon had also a massive accident that was completely unrelated when you see the replay. He got punted by, was it Vettel? Smashed into him? And they both went off to hospital, but for completely separate reasons. And Russell did his thing when he came out of the car and he ran over to see if Joe was okay, and then he couldn't do anything and kind of just walked off. It's like, what was he going to do? Lift the Formula One car up?
Just like poke him and go, ooh.
That doesn't look good.
Hey kids, do you want to see a dead body?
To be fair, it's the sort of thing I do. Like someone fainted near me in a venue somewhere. And a bunch of people rushed in, but I was stood quite close. But I just genuinely didn't know what to do. But it felt wrong to run away. So I just kind of pointed. Yeah,
he's gone down.
His roll hoops failed.
Yeah, you should check he's not wetting himself.
Yeah. Don't take any pictures for now, just until we know he's all right. What did this all mean for the chapter? Because the race got going eventually, didn't it? And then it was a good race.
Yeah, great. I wasn't there before you
asked. This was the one where... You weren't. You weren't at the British Grand Prix.
No, I was at Formula E Marrakesh.
Was it too far to go?
I was at Formula E Marrakesh. Harry Benjamin did it. He got the...
Did the BBC...
Oh, I should have mentioned him in the intro. I forgot about him.
No, did the BBC get pissed off?
With what?
You fucking off to do a marbles or whatever you do.
No, because I missed like three or four races.
Oh, but guys, there's like a live marble race. I've really got to go. They really love me.
Marrakesh.
It's like three or four races a year.
Marblecash.
Out of 24, it's fine. It's chill. They don't mind.
All right.
They got the substitute in. They got the Nick De Vries of commentary.
Yeah, exactly.
This was the one where Hamilton overtook two people at once, and then within a lap, they both got past him again.
And Ferrari threw away a win for Charles Leclerc. In a shocking turn of events.
In every race.
Listener question. Ray Glennon says, Merry Christmas, Jack. I'm psyched that Formula E is coming to Portland, Oregon next year. If I wear a Stoffel Roffel t-shirt to the race, will you sign it for me?
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't sound like you're going.
I'll sign anything.
Well, we've heard that. It's all your cameo. I think Portland maybe doesn't have a great motorsport scene.
There's an IndyCar race there every year at the Portland International Raceway, which is a pretty decent race.
Okay, well, in that case, I'm completely wrong. But it's IndyCar, which is basically like the American Formula E, as we've discussed before.
Yeah, exactly. But no, absolutely.
But it's a good town, Portland.
I'm really excited to go. It's meant to be really, really cool.
It is. I've spent a good few days there, and it was highly entertaining.
Buzzing. Well, honestly, if any of you have any recommendations, not now, but
Voodoo Donuts.
Okay, or now.
Voodoo Donuts is my big recommendation.
Right, I'll just
Slappy Cakes. There's a place that does it's got heated tables, and you do pancakes on the table. But it also had the best steak I ever had in my life. So if it's still there, yeah. Slappy Cakes.
There's also the Burnside Skate Park if you know how to skate.
Slappy Pretty Cakes, good. Make your own pancakes breakfast place.
Oh, okay, it's fucking amazing.
What was your one, Phil?
Yeah. Voodoo Donuts. Maple Bacon Bar.
And it's 24 hours.
Oh, it's so good.
Funky 24-hour donut spot.
It's like trying to get barbecue in Austin. There'll be a queue for the best place.
I remember there was a food truck called Fried Egg I'm in Love.
Right. Austria. As is now tradition, we wondered how Ferrari would mess up their race, but for a long time in Spielberg, it looked like Scuderia had finally cracked it. Although Verstappen won the sprint race and started on pole for the Grand Prix, Charlie Clark and Carly Sainz got past him and were romping into an easy 1-2. But then, of course, the curse of Maranello struck and Sainz's engine grenaded itself in spectacular fashion. While Leclerc closed the gap in the championship, it wasn't by much, as it should have been. Also, Hamilton got another podium.
Well, it looked like it did at least win this one. This was the weekend where Red Bull weren't quite on form, I seem to remember. I mean, Verstappen still obviously got a podium, but...
I think they went the wrong way on strategy, and I think because it was a sprint weekend, they never quite recovered from that. I think Leclerc overtook Verstappen about 3 or 4 times during the race because they were doing that offset strategy, didn't they, where they were going longer and having fresher tyres and coming back at him. And this was the one where you were like, right, here we go, championship fight. It's back on. It's been a bit dodge, but now Leclerc's winning. Ferrari are quicker on pace. Here we go, chaps. What a season we're in for, alas.
And I do also recall that this was a race where Haas were randomly really good, despite being pretty much nowhere for most of the season.
This was where Schumacher, he finished 6th, which was his last points of the season and only his second points of the season, because he'd been quite good in Silverstone as well, hadn't he, fighting with Verstappen at the end. But yeah, he finished 6th here, and you thought, okay, Mick has got it together now. After, you know, that shunt in Monaco, what, 4 races previous, and Gunter Steiner saying, we can't afford this anymore. Suddenly Mick's finishing 6th, and that was a feel-good story. I was really pleased for Mick. It didn't obviously go the way we wanted in the end, but this felt like a turning point.
Now he's got a seat at Mercedes.
Yes, exactly.
Not racing, obviously, but...
Do you reckon Gunter Steiner thought he was up for the Ferrari job?
Probably. I don't know.
I mean, he's Italian, isn't he? Is he Italian Swiss?
He's Italian. You know, like German, he is. Legitimate. I think he was
German,
born in
German Italian.
He was born in Italy. I'm pretty sure.
It's the German speaking part of Italy, isn't it? Because all the borders were a bit fluid for a while.
Yeah.
For some reason, I can't remember why.
That's a very nice way of putting it. Oh, the borders are a bit fluid for a while. 6 million people died. It's fine.
I mean, at this point, so going into this weekend, Verstappen didn't even lead Leclerc by 34 points. He led Perez by 34 points. It was over, wasn't it, at this point? We were like, yeah, this is before the summer break.
The win made us think it wasn't over. The win made us think it wasn't over. Yeah, totally. Then, especially the next race, which we'll talk about, presumably next, but that gave you a bit of hope as well, the first half of that race. Do you want to jump the gun?
Well, let's talk about that race now.
No, let's talk about it in a minute. Because this is a great time to take a short break.
What I've done is tease the second half. That's what's just happened.
That was very professional.
Yeah. We are going to take a short break, regroup, say thank you to, yes, you, for listening this year. Jack, what would you like to say to our listeners?
Thank you for continuing to support. They might not be the award-winning Checkered Flag podcast, but I think that the podcast scene is much richer for the, you know, independent podcasts like this. So thank you very much for helping those people and for giving Terry something to do.
Not financially richer, obviously. But, yeah.
You're making us sound like we're a seller or something with the independent thing.
Or charity.
The garagists.
Yeah, exactly.
None of your works Checkered Flag team.
That's exactly it, yeah.
So also thank you for all the beers, particularly the ones that you donated today. They are Scott Forrest, who says, Merry Christmas, you filthy, sexy animals. Enjoy the pints. Glue wine for Terry. Is
glue that right? Vine.
Glue vine.
Glue vine.
Like glue vine.
Sorry.
Yeah, lovely. Mm. Fresh from the forest. Scott Forrest.
Ryan Simpson, who says, thanks for another year of laughs, even when F1 is a bit shit. I can always rely on you lot to make it a bit less shit. Thanks, Ryan.
But it wasn't
what a quote.
But is that dying with faint praise? Because F1 wasn't that shit this year.
I mean, maybe he's saying it's thanks to us.
Or that's saying we're incredible.
We are incredible.
Sure, I choose to believe that's what he's saying. I identify as incredible.
Anonymous, who says, thanks for being the podcast that is making F1 bearable. Last year was painful and the lack of compassion was just as bad. Glad the three of you are back together. Merry Christmas. Please don't read my name out. It would make me curl into my own bumhole. Why? Because you're embarrassed.
Well, thank you,
Geraldine. You're embarrassed for listening to this podcast. Ellis Piddock.
Thank you, Ellis.
And Patrick Brennan.
Thanks, Patrick Brennan.
Patrick. Thanks. Wasn't that the serial killer from American Psycho?
A big thanks to our regular donors keeping us in beer through the off-season. This week we honour David Findlay, Jason R. Bradley, yeah. Gabriel Rossenkota, Paul Hewings, yeah. Michael Rigby, yeah. Marble 127, Michael Perry, Greg Hoffman, yeah. Donald Griffin, Christopher Beck, Keith Russell, Brad Youngman, Neil Fraser, Keith Falconer, yeah. Bernard Waugh, yes. and Chris
Cut
Lee.
Out my bumhole.
Join them.
Thank you.
Join them all. ff1s.com/pint.
Sports Social Podcast Network.